You're only one misconfiguration away from a breach. What are your thoughts when you hear a quote like that?
I think when I hear a quote like that, it is absolutely true. It is an asymmetric problem. Attackers have to find just one weakness to get in. Defenders, like the customers, have to, you know, have the 100% coverage. But it's not that you got to do everything perfect. There's going to be, you know, you're never going to stop attacks. You're never going to, you know, and there could be some challenges coming in. It's what is the risk of inaction? What is the risk of this access? So people are built identity systems for the last two decades. But the concept of risk of an identity, the fact if I'm giving access to Jim means I'm taking on a risk. I'm hoping Jim is a legitimate employee, he does legitimate actions, but sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes your account could be compromised. So this additional threat vector we are looking at right now means every account has a risk.
This is Identity at the Center. If it has anything to do with IAM, this is the go-to podcast. Now your hosts, Jim McDonald and Jeff Stedman.
Welcome to the Identity at the Center podcast. I'm Jeff, and that's Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Oh, not so bad. Yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm, as always, very excited for this episode. I discovered Venkat a while back at an event, and Ian Singh, who probably most people who are listening to this podcast know Ian. He's very much a contributor to our community on LinkedIn and various other formats as well. He introduced me to Venkat. I got to learn a little bit about the Stack Identity product, and so I'm glad we're able to kind of bring their message to our community.
Yeah, looking forward to this one, and definitely want to give a shout out to Ian for the connection. He's also been a great supporter for the show, so shout out to Ian. Today's episode is a sponsored episode, something that we developed these in collaboration with our friends over today at Stack Identity. If you don't know a Stack Identity, they are your co-pilot to solve identity security problems. We're going to find out what that means. You can learn more about them at stackidentity.com/IDAC. And so we've got Venkat Raghavan, founder and CEO at Stack Identity. Welcome to Identity at the Center, Venkat.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jim. Good morning.
So thanks for taking the time. One of the things we like to do is really find out about the background and the origin stories of people who appear on our show. So let's start with that. How did you get into the IAM industry? What set up your, or ignited maybe your passion for this sector of cybersecurity?
Gosh, I got to go 25 years back here. So my first start was, I'm an engineer by trade. So built early distributed systems for companies. And I was working on a specification called Security Assertions Markup Language, or SAML, as it's very popularly known these days, which is the kind of the rubric of identity today. I got pretty excited about the opportunity to kind of have a common language by which you can speak identity to each other electronically. And so that got me excited. For some reason, I dug into this a bit more and joined a startup called Dascom, which were pioneers in using SAML to build the first generation of identity management and single sign-on systems, which powered a lot of Java applications back in the first days of internet era. So had a great experience in this identity space. And I never left, frankly. I got to know SAML, built products, was part of a startup called Dascom. We got acquired by IBM. And here I am still, 25 years later, still digging this.
So you've got a long history in this space. Let's talk about Stack Identity. What's the core problem that Stack Identity looks to solve for? And you know, this is a very competitive space. How do you set yourself apart from others in such a crowded market?
I think it's useful to kind of go back and look at how industries evolved in the last two decades, right? I mean, when we first started Dascom and worked on the early generation of these technologies, the problem we were trying to solve was simplifying granting of access. And so that was very complicated. IT was growing leaps and bounds. And people had a lot of applications to sign on to. So single sign-on, having a single password is a big, big issue, big pain point that we solved successfully over the last 25 years or so. But now the issue is granting of access is the easy part. Removing access is quite difficult, quite challenging. Why? When you remove access, people scream at you. They don't like it. And they feel like they're taking something away. They were taking something away from their daily work. For whatever reason, it becomes emotional, cultural, sometimes political. And so what happens is that if you don't remove the access under whatever pressure you're in companies, then what happens? There's some access for all. Hordes of access lying around years and years. And it's easy pickings for attackers. The last 100 breaches, attackers always compromise the same pattern, a compromised identity, but with a compromised or weak credential that should have been removed, that wasn't removed. And we only find out after the fact. So the problem the stack is solving is to kind of figure out, how do I simplify and make it easy, an easy button for removing access? And so that's, I think, the innovation we're applying. And it's very difficult to kind of convince people to remove the access, but we got to do that. And that's where we're empowering teams to go do that.
So I love to find out also about the names of companies. How did you come up with the name Stack Identity?
Well, I think if you look at least even a decade ago, right, we were operating just Active Directory, maybe a few LDAPs. That's it. You know, today's world, companies deal with 25, 30 different identity systems. Your AD, your LDAPs, you have Entra ID, you have Okta, you have applications that have their own identities, and it goes on and on, right? So this sprawl of identities was massive. So now we're seeing identities built into your operating systems and clouds and applications and databases. So we see stacks of identities, right, you know, all over the place. And so for customers, it's very difficult to manage all the identity populations they have. And so the stack is named to kind of reflect the fact there's now a distributed identity system, and it's going to be that way for the next, you know, several decades. How do we still bring the unified perspective of identities and what they're doing in the environment? And that's what we're trying to accomplish here with stack.
You know, Venkat, I was thinking stack could also mean these stacks and stacks of entitlements that people accumulate over time. Because that's really what it sounds to me like the problem that you're solving, right, is that this entitlement creep scenario where you keep getting more and more access, whether it's, you know, I don't think it's intentional, right? Nobody's out there trying to do the wrong thing. But we, you know, as consultants in our day-to-day lives, Jeff and I see scenarios where companies are still doing what we call model after. So then Kat joins the company and he's, you know, backfilling for Jeff. Make him like Jeff. Well, what they don't realize is that Jeff has been working here for 15 years and now he has all this different access. So that's one scenario. But kind of what I'm very interested in is, where do you fit into that life cycle or that workload of getting from the point where it's like you're provisioning these entitlements to now you have them and you may or may not be using them? Where does Stack solve the problem? Is which part of that workflow is it?
Yeah, a great question. So you're right. It's all about stacks of identities. And we should be clear, it's both human as well as non-human. Because most of the time we're seeing a new era of machine identities coming in, workloads and whatnot, APIs, AI applications, and so on and so forth. So we have stacks of identities and stacks of permissions, stacks of privileges, stacks of policies, right? So that's a complete, mess we have. So granting them access is easy, right? Many tools do it effectively. So we're not solving that problem. Once access is granted, what happens on day two, day three, day five, day 10, day 100? You know, are you using the access? You know, are you do you have more access than necessary? Do you have privileged access that's not required? And so we look into how do we understand and help customers understand where are they over-permissioned in their environments? Where are unusual access patterns, unusual behaviors of access? Because anytime there's an access, there's a risk of somebody doing an exfiltration or an attack on your critical systems. So we are always focused on continuing to understand the access attack surface and always helping you to automate the reduction of this. So the primary goal that we're trying to solve is post grant of access for any identity, machine or human, how do we make sure they only get the right access for the right reasons, for the right duration, for the right purpose, and that's it. And tell customers to kind of continuously operate in least privileged mode. That's our goal, and that's our IP we built to the company.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, one of the things that Jeff mentioned is, you know, he asked the question of how did you come up with the name of Stack? I'm also interested to understand. So you've got this tagline around Copilot for Identity Security. So what is that all about? What was the mentality there?
Yeah, if you look at every CISO you talk to or an identity leader, they will internally talk to themselves and they know they have to solve this problem. They know they have a challenge with excessive access running amok, whether it's employees, contractors, third parties, whatever it is, they know this. And they can put their arms around this problem. And so why is that? They know they have to do this, but they cannot do this. Because things are too complex right now, right? They have to deal with many different systems. They're dealing with, you know, identity systems, access control systems, applications, databases, and whatnot. So they are struggling to figure out, how do I get my arms around this? And so the answer for our customers is to help them leverage automation. So Copilot is the ability for us to work in concert with the customers and be almost like a co-pilot to the customer's environments. Watch over their environments continuously, understand where the problems are, and quickly tap them on the shoulder and saying, hey, there's a problem here. So Copilot is all about the sort of the AI world of automated visibility, automated access control, automated resolutions. So customers don't have to put human labor in all those things. And today we've seen many, many companies that use spreadsheets and screenshots and emails back and forth just to figure out, hey, is this access required for gym? That's a back and forth that happens for like a couple of weeks. So Copilot takes a different approach. It's entirely automated. It's data-driven. And through that approach, customers are informed of problems automatically in our console. So they kind of get to see, okay, these are the areas I'm focused on. These are my exposures. These are my exploit, things I need to go look after, right? And these are the ways I need to resize or right-size my policies. That's the whole idea of Copilot, is to give you the automation layer. So we can automatically detect these, unwanted access, unauthorized access, shadow access, and help customers to kind of go through a process of fixing these things as well automatically.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the points that you made there was real interesting around not only the human identities. It's so easy to fall into the trap to think about identity as human beings, but there's also all these non-human identities, especially in your cloud environments. So let's kind of like shift into, let's talk meat and potatoes. So what are the environments, the cloud platforms that you guys support? And then if I'm wanting to use Stack in that environment, what is the implementation of like that like? In other words, how do I go about it? You know, at like a 10,000 foot level.
Yeah, it's quite simple. We support all the major cloud platforms today. We are a multi-cloud and a multi-IDP. Multi-cloud meaning you support AWS, Azure, GCP, and things like that. We also support multiple identity providers like Okta, Active Directory, Entra ID. We also support identities that are built into databases, database identities, database admins, and things like that. So the platform is a SaaS platform. It's easy to deploy and onboard. And we take read-only access for a particular cloud account. Customers create a couple of policies for us and give a limited access scope. Through APIs, we ingest this data. It takes about 5 minutes to onboard a specific cloud account or an identity account for us, like Okta, for example. And then we do the analysis, we do the detections. And the time to initial value is about 60 minutes or less. So very simple to easy to do product. We have a nice dashboard that builds trust with our customers we tell them where things are in the global population space. What are the various activities, behaviors? Where are the risks of identities? Where are the over-permissioned access? And we go through a guided process to help customers to understand, agree, acknowledge, and then take action from the platform.
So forgive me for sounding a little bit incredulous, but I'm going to paraphrase what you just said. If in about an hour, you're able to pull all this information together and really start having actionable data across GCP, Azure, AWS, various IDPs, et cetera. You're pulling that data that quickly and really starting to be able to get your hands around the cloud, right? Which is kind of like this amorphous thing, right? How do you grab a cloud, right? You're kind of trying to get to it, but did I hear that correctly?
Absolutely. I mean, I wish I could show you demo right now, but maybe the next time or the next episode here. But the point is, that's the part of the cloud, right? API-based applications. If you're a SaaS, as an API, we ingest this data. So it's easy for us to grab data, put it together. The power of our platform is not the ingestion, but the correlation, the detection, the analysis that we do automatically. And we can do very, very large accounts too. So we have customers who are kind of small, medium, and large, extra large kind of accounts. So, we are able to then, the IP we built is to kind of understand and the entire populations. The challenge in this problem is always going to be, am I going to miss an island of identities lying around, which I've not even touched, right? That's a problem. And that is an exposure. Customers don't have the visibility. The idea is getting 100% visibility of all the identities across your environments. And that's what we do. So that's an important statement. It's not doing for one cloud or one platform and calling it a day. It's about looking at the entire identity populations that may live in your cloud accounts, your identity providers, your databases, on-prem, hybrid, cloud native, and whatnot. So it's the comprehensiveness of our ingestion and the correlation with the customer's complete trust and visibility. It's their data. It's their story. And we just help them to kind of get to the quick conclusion and remove all the toil of managing, spreadsheets and emails and back and forth, and have them manage their policies. And automate via the co-pilot, things they can take action quickly, right? And so the goal is to continue to shrink this attack surface, this automation. And I believe this is the way to go. At the end of the day, the customers don't have time, the resources are constrained. They're going to use technologies like generative AI, which we've employed in our technology, to kind of bring this power of automation to market and get them to take action to kind of remove the access. That's really the more important goal, not to kind of show nice, pretty pictures, but to help them take action.
Hey, Venkat, I want to get your thoughts on a statement or a quote that I've heard a few times, which is that you're only one misconfiguration, or maybe it's one over-entitled account. You're only one misconfiguration away from a breach. To me, that puts a lot of onus on the identity management practitioner, but I kind of feel like that just means you have to have the right tools. But what are your thoughts when you hear a quote like that?
I think when I hear a quote like that, it is absolutely true. It is an asymmetric problem. Attackers have to find just one weakness to get in. Defenders, like the customers, have to have the 100% coverage. But it's not that you got to do everything perfect. There's going to be, you're never going to stop attacks. You're never going to, and there could be some challenges coming in. It's what is the risk of inaction? What is the risk of this access? So people are built identity systems for the last two decades. But the concept of risk of an identity, the fact if I'm giving access to Jim means I'm taking on a risk. I'm hoping Jim is a legitimate employee, does legitimate actions, but sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes your account could be compromised. So this additional threat vector we're looking at right now means every account has a risk that you need to understand and take action. So the focus is really not about, do the basics correct, right? For example, if there's over-permissioned access, clean it out. If there are unused access, clean it out. If there's excessive access, clean it out. If you have poor posture, clean it out. So doing the basics correct and having complete visibility around these basic hygiene, if you will, solves 80% of the problem, Jim, in this market. Now we've got 20% to go. The remaining 10%, now we got the hygiene done. It's, you're comfortable with that. Then now look at the next 10%. How do I look at the critical crown jewels? Data, databases, customer data, supply chain, look at external actors who want to come in, tighten those things up. That's another 10%. Another 5% is, okay, where are my policy gaps? Where are my blind spots? Fix that. Now you get to 95% pretty much, and remaining 5% is there's a risk you need to accept. So by methodically looking at, brass tacks, hygiene, configuration practices, least privilege practices, better posture, improved posture, and tightening your policies, tightening your guardrails, education, you get to the 95% mark, and then the remaining 5% is the risk of doing business. That's why I think about it. That way you can make progress. And it's never going to be about 100%, but it's always about having a method in place. And tools currently right now don't have this methodology. They're built for 20 years ago for compliance and audit and automation for productivity purposes. Now, identity is becoming a threat dimension. Access is a threat dimension. This is the change the market is seeing in the last decade. it's going to get worse with the arrival of AI and, you know, machine identities and things like that. So that's a new, you know, new thought here. So Jim, you asked earlier about lifecycle. You know, we have to now leverage threat as part of the identity lifecycle, which we've never done before. So the notion of threat as a part of a lifecycle of identity management has to be a front and center thought. And that's the area where we are pioneering great innovation around.
You know, another thought that what you just said there triggered another thought to me, which is, you know, a lot of the cloud environments were spun up not with the inclusion of information security and the IAM strategists and practitioners within an organization. It was application development teams were given like, hey, make this happen. We need to have this data lake and this great whiz bang project. And they went out and they built it. And a lot of times they're not security minded. So they weren't trying to get each account down to least privilege. Now someone says to the CISO, hey, buddy, the buck stops at your desk. You're responsible for protecting our data. And now the CISO, he or she has to figure out, oh, we've got those crown jewels out there in this cloud. Now I need to figure out how to make it more secure. And I think one of a great place to start, it's not going to give you everything, but a great place to start would be to start looking at, especially those machine accounts, but all accounts, which ones are over-provisioned.
A great point. Yeah, the power of the cloud, right, is automation. That's how the cloud, we love the cloud so much. It's a tremendous amount of power, right? I mean, things like using, for example, you know, infrastructure as code, like Terraform, for example, you can spin up cloud in like 5 minutes, right? You can imagine you can spin up a database in 30 seconds, you can put up a database, right? And upload customer data and do it, right? And go away. The environment is quite difficult. So by all accounts, most cloud environments are automatically over-provisioned because of automation, you know, and developers are driven by their KPIs or productivity and velocity of code, not examination privileges. That's not their job. So they want to go where they want to build cool applications and monetize data, bring the latest AI, ML model, generative AI, show value, right, and run and create value for the business. Security teams are pretty much on the outside and looking at this cloud. It's so fast and growing so fast. So when the buck stops with the security teams, they struggle, right? At the end of the day, they don't have any policy control over this environment. And so what we're trying to do is to kind of bridge the gap, is to kind of bridge, help the security teams understand the risk of already over-permissioned access, already exposures created, primarily to data assets, because it's so easy to spin up a data asset in the cloud and build an application to share data. So data sharing is ubiquitous. Like, imagine how easy it is for us, you and I, to share, a Google Sheet, right? Or, you know, it takes 2 minutes for us to create a spreadsheet or a doc and share it with you. Done. Imagine now you're sharing the same terabytes of data with that level of simplicity. I can share my Google Drive or my Snowflake instances to my third parties and do interesting applications. So, and I just in 2 minutes, you have changed the world from a highly change-controlled environment to a completely, ad hoc way to share data about customers and whatnot to various third parties using APIs. So there is no visibility to these entire things. So that's why I go back to the Copilot thought is we need to bring the power of automation to work to solve this problem. This problem is going to be automation in the first place in the cloud. So let's leverage automation and AI together to bring that early visibility, to bring that continuous visibility to practitioners of identity and security. So they can kind of keep up with this thing and start to figure out how they can speak about risk, right? The job of the CISOs is not to talk about, not to take on risk, but to speak about risk. Yeah, this is where I'm exposed. This is where the risk is, and this is where the impact is going to be. You guys take a call on this. So we're going to help CISOs and the board ultimately take a call. And these are the exposures, but now we're going to make it super simple, super easy. And that's the reason why we're so thrilled about, stoked about AI and machine learning and data lakes and whatnot. So this ability for us to bring that continuous visibility, as things happen, you're able to respond to events and either shut it down or take action, that's super compelling. And go back in the day of, you know, change management, and you have 3 months to do access reviews today. And people don't even do access reviews today. You know, in 3 months, every manager hates it. And when you want to review access for your employees or your reports, you go find your favorite tool. I won't name these tools today, but you can find a select all button and bulk approve. Done. It's a headache. I'm done. So nobody is examining access privileges. It shouldn't be there. So when it doesn't happen through either a flawed process or a complex process, access accrues. So we want to bring in automation and simplicity, because without simplicity and data, our customers will not take action. That's the differentiating aspect of what Stack does.
So how do you use something like Stack to measure the success of the implementation or the data you're getting out of it? Because you talked about risk, right, and access permissions and cleanup, et cetera. I have to imagine that you've got, you know, customers right now that are using the product. How do they measure success to know that they've gotten a return on the investment they've made?
Yeah, let me give an example of this. You know, our customers, when you talk to the security teams, even the CISO, right, their job is to raise risks and awareness. And so now, let's say they have an environment in which they found all the risks of AWS. They're going to knock on their colleagues, the VP of engineering who owns the cloud. Hey, you got to go fix this, buddy. The VP of engineering says, you know what? I don't have time for this. I'll look at it when I can, right? So now, we have surfaced the intelligence and the risk. The CISO has told his peers, you got to go fix it, but nothing happens. So what happens now? A month goes by, still nothing happens. Right? So now, there's a back and forth, right? So what we do is it could be a bit SLA sort of the product. Now, you know, if that risk you're generating, if it's a high severity risk, it's got to be fixed within 1 week, right? And now we become the broker. So our ticketing mechanism includes this SLA. So now the cloud engineering VP has to respond to this. They can say, look, I accept the risk. I'll fix it within a week. I will accept the risk. I will fix it in 2 weeks. I will not accept the risk, escalate this to the business. So our job is to kind of make sure they come together, collaborate on the single platform called Stack Identity. The risks of high fidelity, high urgency has to be taken care of. And at least everybody's on the same page. That's the same data they're looking at. The CISO and the identity team looking at the same data as the DevOps or the security teams are looking at. So we're able to bring this collaborative platform through SLA. So at the end of the day, it's not, you know, I'll do it when I can. Let's look at the risk. And if you can resolve this at this level, we elevate this to the head of operations or the business unit leader, whatever it is. Our goal ultimately is to kind of keep on nudging through the SLA so somebody can actually remove the access. Until such point in time, access is not removed, we've not done our job. And that's our goal, is to kind of take that last mile, help leaders and owners and stakeholders and risk managers and teams understand the risk, agree on the risk, and then have deliberate plans for them to fix these problems. So measurement of what our product does is how many of these tickets have we solved have actually removed the access. Is it growing? Is it shrinking? How's it happened in the last, you know, how, what is the trending? So when they see the trend lines coming down, they see value in the product. That we're able to now, you know, take a fairly chaotic environment of unbridled access and brought it down to manageable set of issues and risks, and be able to provide continuous visibility and operational fidelity around this. So that's what customers measure, right? And do it in a very automated fashion, which means they're not repurposing their teams to go do this. You know, Copilot takes it for them automatically.
You talked about those nudges, and I see this as well as sort of in the real world, is people are always hesitant to take away access because they're not sure what it does. It's going to break something, and so they just kind of leave it, I guess. You know, is that fair where we're at today, where people just don't know what their human and sometimes non-human accounts are doing? And so that hesitancy is real. How do you take something like that and say, okay, well, here's a better way to do it? Maybe there's more context around what this account does, or the continuous evaluation, right, of what the access is doing and shrinking attack surfaces and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about why you see those nudges being needed still? And then how does that reduce the attack surface once you get through the nudge factor?
Yeah, most of the time, for example, you know, when you're trying to remove access, you don't have the full context, right? Because that removing that access could impact other downstream applications, legitimate reasons, right? Why users could be disabled and not get access to the system. So the worry is, am I going to break something down the line? So the first thing you do is to give you the complete picture. If you remove this axis, this is going to be the impact, right, of all these systems. We build a map and we show that graph. So we build trust in our data itself, number one. So the first thing is they're more confident, hey, nobody's accessed the last 90 days. Okay, you know, this access is very risky. It's got a high degree of impact. Think of some of the breaches that's happened over the last, massive breaches, right? We've seen them time and again. And you got to take action on this, right? And so that's one example is to kind of give visibility. The second area we've helped customers is, look, even if I have to remove the access, some people call it the screen test, right? You remove access and I screen. Oh my God, I need access. Okay, if you're doing screen test, you go back to a URL and you request access again. Your access will be restored immediately. So we remove the issue of, we remove the issue of, if customers do need access, taken up for some reason, we can now give them access back, but now it's more just in time because you're only using it once in 90 days. So we're able to kind of bring this process together to kind of institutionalize a behavioral change. It's a behavioral change. And behaviors won't change overnight. A, it needs data. It needs impact to downstream applications. And what happens if I do make a mistake? Can I restore that mistake quickly? That's the third part. All three things are part of our platform. So customers are comfortable. Hey, even if I remove the access, you're going to scream at me. Go to this link, request access. Within 30 seconds, we'll reprovision the access. But now we can give you a limited-based access, right? Now I've culturally removed the access and also kind of give you more of a time-based approach. So I've made great progress in the behavior and sentiments of these problems. So those are the couple of areas we really, customers like this. And again, all of this is automated. So there's no kind of back and forth around this. So we remove the human toil, and that's a big issue. Now, these things are more complex in the machine identities, right? There's nobody to tap and verify access, So we see a lot of cases, for example, when people are using machine identities and abusing it as human users and vice versa. So we kind of have all these environments where, look, wherever there's a risk of access or an abuse of access, where things are sort of awry, we kind of bring it back. But at the end of the day, we take a lot of pride in operationally making sure customers are able to manage this entire problem within their culture, within their workflows, within their environments. Only then we see, big adoption happening in our environments, the customers.
So you mentioned, we've been talking an awful lot about the cloud. I think early on you mentioned that there were also some capabilities around on-prem systems like Active Directory and database. Are there differences in how that integration works? Is it relatively the same? Talk to me a little about sort of like the divide between cloud and then maybe on-prem resources.
Yeah, I think mostly for cloud being such a modern platform, it's all API based. So most of the times we have very good APIs to integrate. So we don't have to have agents deployed on these systems. We can just use APIs. I use the cloud control plane to look at our data. When it's really on-prem, then there's no native cloud. There's no cloud native way to kind of talk to the resources, right? We need some sort of a connector or an agent where we deploy on the premise itself, which acts like a broker, right? To look at this. Those are the areas that I think, for on-prem environments, we do need some agents deployed, but that's really a consequence of where the technology is. But at the end of the day, it's all about the universal visibility, right? The single layer that aggregates all the information together into a single place. And so we kind of build this abstraction where whether it's cloud, whether it's on-prem, whether it's hybrid, whether it's cloud native or customer managed, it doesn't really matter. Your identities are where they are. Our job is to go pick out these identities and give this focus. I'm also going to address one other issue, right? In terms of, I think Jimmy brought this up early on around this access issue. And we talk about stacks of identities and stacks of access, right? Now, stacks of access was always a problem. Given the complexity. Now with the stacks of identities coming in, all these platforms, cloud, enterprise, and database and whatnot, many cases, for example, right, a user is called multiple accounts. You might have 5, 6, 7 accounts in your system, and they could be across cloud platforms and on-prem. And the idea that everything is going to be on a single identity or a single IAM is almost impossible. That train is off the station. For the last 20 years, we built a system with the premise that I can manage Jim Saturday in one single place. And that premise is gone. So now we're living in a world where you're going to have multiple identities, multiple personas, and multiple access. So for example, if you were to log in to a system and you fail your passwords 3 times today, what is the typical response for a company? They would automatically reset a password, good practice, and they would do an out-of-band MFA challenge. Again, good practice. But nobody was going to look at whether or not these 3 password failures was really Jim forgetting the password or illegitimate attempt by an attacker trying to pawn Jim's account or do an account takeover. Because the 4th signal doesn't happen right away. So you have a process that's dear to password resets and you move on. As a co-pilot, we're watching over these things. Hey, what happened? Wait a minute. There's now a 5th attempt happened 2 days later. We put the 3 together, 2 together. Wait a minute. This is now early patterns of ransomware attack on a particular account. So these are the things we're doing is really, you know, and this is difficult for humans to figure out. They're not going to watch over every event every time. So this automation that we've built helps us understand what are really legitimate access patterns, what are illegitimate and unauthorized access patterns that would indicate attacks and whatnot. So I just want to kind of add a bit of a color as well as to what we do really at a product platform level.
You know, just what I wanted to say there, Venkat, was early on with what you just said, you talked about, well, you know, primarily the on-prem infrastructure doesn't have all the connectors. I know if I was building a product right now, I'd focus on the cloud because my perspective is you've already seen cloud take a big bite out of on-prem infrastructure. And I think that 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, I mean, it's going to be smaller and smaller. It's just like the same progression we saw with mainframes. I'm not saying that I think it'll ever go away. Mainframes are still around. They'll probably still be around when I retire, but you know, it's becoming a less significant piece over time. So that was where I would focus. But I think there's another thing at play here, which is that the cloud environments were built in a way that tools like Stack Identity have what they need in order to do the type of analysis, right? You need to know what the accounts are, what access they have, but then you also need to know what access they're actually using, right? Because it's the bumping up of those two things to say, hey, here's all this access this account has that's not at use. Why is that important? So to me, and I'm hoping you can either validate or correct me, but why is that important? Why? Okay, so this account has these 7 roles that it's not using. Who cares? Well, it's about attack surface, right? It's about, hey, if I have an account out there that has, it's over-provisioned with entitlements and somebody gets control of that account, now they have all those entitlements. And even though those entitlements haven't been getting used, well, now they just open up a whole new door. Now, that account could be taken over regardless, right? That's a totally separate control. But do you want that account to be least privilege, or do you want it to have least privilege plus who knows how many additional privileges? So am I, and like I said, the cloud environment, the cloud platforms have the pieces and parts to make that determination. If the on-prem environment had all those things, this would have been getting done 10, 15 years ago because the problem existed then and people wanted to solve it then, but they didn't have visibility to where all the accounts were being used. And we had SIM and we tried to pull all this information together, but everyone knew it wasn't complete. So if you just started taking access away, that's that part that you started off the conversation with. It was like, that's scary. You start taking away roles just because you think they're not being used, but they actually are being used. Problem, right? But in the cloud environment, you have a higher level of confidence, maybe 100% confidence, that role is actually not being used.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. You hit the nail on the head. You know, if you look at the pattern of ransomware attacks, you know, the big one on United Health Group and all those, it's all the same pattern, a compromised identity. And then that's not enough. You need privileges and permissions to elevate yourself and laterally move across the organization. It's all about lateral movement, right? What enables lateral movement? It's access and privileges. So if you can cut off these links by removing access, right? And you know, then you can limit the damage, you can contain the attack, you know. And so understanding how identities can move within the enterprise, how can they flow, and what access they can use to get from A to B to C to D to go to the target, that's crucial. Which means that in cloud, even in regular environments, we need to look at not just the provisioned access, but how is Jim using this access, or a service account using this access? That means you got to look at, for example, what's happening over a period of time. The time could be 90 days, for example, or 120 days. Okay, and what's happening with this time boundary? Now the user, if there's a regular role, you'll be using this account to do things, right? There'll be some activity on this account. There'll be some actions on the target resource. There could be some behaviors, but if none of them are present, then the problem is you're just under unnecessary access. So the access attack surface is really byproduct of, if you're not using the access, you got to give up the access. That should be the very simple process. If you're not using the access, you should just give up the access automatically. Now, today, we don't have these tools for doing this. And cloud has made it very easy, right? But you also need two data points. One is, what's your access and are you using it? So you can automate the time-based analysis. Then we can easily give you, without any false positive, right? We can clearly, really, you're not using this access. There's proof. And so you don't need access, okay? So I'm going to remove the access. Let's say Jim says, I'm going to use it once in 90 days because it's a quarterly report. Great. Then I'm going to give you a just-in-time access, a one-time access. You can just use it. So the number of ways we can look at data and we can analyze activities and behaviors and actions to then compare with your intended goal of giving access and to solve this problem. In cloud, by the way, many cases, because of automation, nobody even knows why an access was granted. When we show a dashboard on our product, the first thing customers ask us is, I don't know why this happened. It's a very common refrain. I don't know why this access was given, which means there's no way for them to contemplate why somebody would give an access. Maybe it's an emergency access and it just stayed permanent. So there are a lot of scenarios where at the end of the day, it's about, are you using the access? If so, for what purpose? Usage behavior is going to be important for us. And if you give them a long enough window, then we remove all the false positives. We remove all the problems. If you remove access for 30 days, that's not a good practice. You might still need the access. But the ability for us to use automation and to provide the visibility and show evidence and compare with your policies to remove the attack surface, those are the things I think we can get tremendous ROI if we can do this, because these are all early signals that we can kind of stop. By the way, every leader in the identity practice agrees with this. There's a survey done by one of the top identity groups, and 96% of the identity leaders surveyed said they could have stopped an attack. They could have stopped an attack, had they had signals available to them. They didn't say, wait a minute, this was a complex, sort of a zero day, nothing about it. So 96% are saying, look, in retrospect, had they had a data and evidence, I could have prevented this. So that's great, great opportunity for us as startups to go look at, okay, let's solve the problem and get the last mile out, remove the access somehow, and then all of a sudden, right? That's why you're seeing this broad movement to more just-in-time. And don't even get into the problem of managing access. If you need access, anytime you get access, just come in, make a request, you get access anymore. One. Anyways.
No, it's a great point. And I think, we've talked a lot about risk, and I'm wondering, I want to get your perspective on what is the biggest risk that CISOs face? Because to me, here's what it is. It's not the mechanics of all this. It's the ability to identify the risks, communicate the risks, and assign the risks to somebody other than me. And that look, I'm not just trying to be Teflon Don here, but reality is either it's something I need to fix and I probably need some money to fix it. Now, if I have everything I need that I can go fix it, then I have nothing to worry about. It's completely within my control to go ahead and fix it. But a lot of times, these risks that pop up are things that other people need to do, or I need additional investment. And so I need to be able to identify those risks, communicate those risks. And then if I am fulfilled with what I need, then I need to be able to go and remediate those risks. But I'm wondering, maybe you give a more insightful response on what is the biggest risk that CISOs face?
I think if you look at all the ransomware attacks, we all these customers have tremendous amount of products, great technologies, right? And they got 30, 40 plus tools. Yet these things happen, right? Time and again, it happens. It happens to great companies. But there is something fundamentally flawed here. That is, how do we understand what is the biggest risk is? And in our view, the biggest risk is access. Access that could have been prevented or revoked. And if you can have a truly, we're not saying that's going to be stopping all the attacks, but I think what we are saying is that that's going to be number one priority in terms of investments going forward. Because at the end of the day, an attacker or adversary needs access to laterally move and get to where they want to go. So, by the way, every CISO will agree with this. There's no dispute about this. Challenges, I have my on-prem projects. I got my IGAs going. I got this and that going. I got PAM going. I'm looking at PAM for this. I'm looking at XY for this. So we are saying at the end of the day, the environment is changing dramatically, And so it's time to relook at these priorities. I mean, people are spending a lot of money on identity projects today. Even today, it's one of the largest investment categories in the budget. However, this notion of risk is what is a new phenomena. I mean, even analyst Gartner talks about this all the time, like more to more continuous controls, risk-based controls. So we are seeing this big change happening. At the end of the day, you got to look at what the risk is, speak about the risk, but you cannot speak about the risk if you don't have visibility into what's happening. You're not able to explain why something is happening. So with our, automation and our approach to providing an easy way to look at this everything in concert, our job is to provide evidence of the risk and help the CISO communicate the risk to their stakeholders and to take action. So that is approach where we feel like, people cannot wait for this, process that they put in place 20 years ago. Like we have this quarterly audit process, reviewing access. That was done for age of Sarbanes-Oxley and compliance, still required. But now the landscape has changed dramatically. It's cloud first, data first, API first. We live in speed is not security's best friend, and so at the end of the day, attackers know this. They have these weaknesses. So our job is: what if I can come back and tell you within 1 hour your exposures, your exploit, your bare pathways by which you're going to be exposed, your policy gaps, your blind spots, your risky accounts, and help you fix it through automation? I can generate code and do this. And now you can start to now put this and say, wait a minute, I'm going to use this product to figure out where do I need to prioritize my investments in even identity and access management, where do I invest in it? Rather than going off and building a product, look at the process. The world has changed now. So do I have the right visibility into looking at overall risks? Can I communicate these risks to my peers and to the board? Now, based on the risks, can I now focus on actions in these areas, particularly on access and whatnot that I can help you with? So that's a different paradigm, I think, Jim, we're focused on, is that we're seeing the market go towards that. Is that, attackers are not waiting for their quarterly audit reports. They're finding a gap and Zoom, they're going in. And so we're seeing that the ability for us to close the gap, build more assurance and more confidence in our data and help CISOs broker this conversation. They cannot do it alone. They got to talk to their colleagues, agree on what the risk is, agree on risk types, agree on how they could remediate, time to remediate. And these are all operational things that we can go from findings to the operations. That's the area where we feel like we can really help optimize investments and get on this treadmill of getting this more continuous. Continuous access management, continuous verification, continuous detection, continuous tuning of policies. These are the areas we believe we can help customers get to the 95% quickly and manage those risks.
So I think you made a lot of good points there. It's kind of like I want to rewind. One of the most important security architectural principles is like this layers of security, defense in depth. But it's the idea that you try to stop the hacker here, you try to stop the hacker here, you just keep going and adding layers of security. it's almost like you hear this paradigm all the time, which is if you haven't been breached, that just means you don't know you've been breached, or it's not a matter of if, but when. And the idea is that, I mean, you still look at like what's the most common pattern that attackers use. It's phishing and social engineering, right? These things have literally been around for more than 20 years, and they're still the top two ways that people get access. So you almost can look at your accounts and say, they're going to be breached. Someone's going to be able to get access to them. The question is, what can they do when they get the access? So that's that that paradigm of least privilege access and why it's so important. So I think you've made an excellent case here today for what you're doing with Stack Identity. And what I'd like to know is if our listeners are interested in playing or, you know, getting more hands-on with Stack Identity, what's available to them?
Yeah, we have a very easy way to assess the current risks using our Shadow Access Risk Assessment tool. We call it Sierra. So you plug it in, you connect your accounts, you connect your IDPs, and again, within an hour, you get a report that shows you all the quote-unquote access fraud issues you have, right? And then kind of you start the cleanup process. You know, cleaning up our identities and access is an important thing. And because the environments have grown so widely now, you know, on-prem and cloud and whatnot, that singular dashboard and singular view of single pane of glass, the command and control of all the risks that you have currently in the environment, and having a quick view of that is a starting point. Now you look at these risks and you look at what do I do about next? Now you can start to kind of dig into this and figure out where you need to, where are you exposed? What are the critical systems, your crown jewels, whether it's third party, all those things. But it starts with, where am I today? Where am I exposed? Tell me that view. Let me start with that assessment view. And we call it Shadow Access Risk Assessment. Generally speaking, all these problems are really, a gap in access that should be there in the first place. We call it Shadow Access, kind of derived of the Shadow IT as a term. So you start with the Shadow Access, you know, discovery and assessment tool. And then that gives you the foundation to clean up all the identities, tighten up all the weak identities, make them strong, look at all the over-permissioned access, start to reduce your attack surface. You can start putting actions in place based on the data. So initial thing is data gathering, data visibility, and you know, a report that gives you a way to kind of action that starting up front. And again, it takes about 1 hour. So it's not that big an effort, but it gives you enormous value add. I go back and look at, for example, the day before any breach, imagine if you had a report of all these exposures, and imagine surely tomorrow you're going to be breached. You will run fast to fix those things. So you'll drop everything and then go fix it, right? Imagine it's always a small thing, you know, an S3 bucket or a **char permission or some lateral movement permission. Hey, I never thought nobody's going to use it. Oops, yeah, somebody used it. So it's all these small things that is very difficult to spot, and it's lying around, you know, creating these pathways. Let's just blow them off, you know, in a systematic fashion. So yeah, the Shadow Access Risk Assessment is a starting point. And customers can use it. It's free of charge, and they get immediate visibility and get to see what they can do. And that gives confidence them. And then from there, we can start to starburst into many different ways for them to kind of take workflows and take action.
Yeah, I think that it's really great that you've made that available as a free resource to our listeners. Just so folks know, the URL stackidentity.com/IDAC is where you can go to get right there and get that thing downloaded. Wanted to ask you one more question, Venkat. I know you guys are going to be at RSA. Sounds like you have a booth. What's going on at RSA? What's your presence there?
A great, great plan at RSA. The team is super busy with this. First time here at RSA, so super excited to be there as well. So we have a number of demos planned, customer sessions and meetings. So please stop by our booth. We'll be running, demos. Ian is going to be there. So we have a lot of great team, at RSA. So super excited about this. Again, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what we are trying to look at is how do we give customers time back? How do we give customers capacity back? Those are the two things customers don't have. They're already having a lot of projects. And again, this is, again, you know, complex problem. Let's make their jobs a bit easier and get them the help they need And every CISO I talk to knows this problem. They feel in their hearts they got to do something about it. But they're constrained by ongoing projects, this and that. But, you know, so we are kind of coming in and saying, wait a minute, let's give you the unified layer, the visibility layer, to start to look at taking some control back. And for CISOs in particular, cloud has gone through sprawl. I mean, so they got to pull rein this back and put some policies around it. So we think with our automation and our data platform, we can kind of really help customers get quick time to value. That's our main focus. We'll demo this RSA. We also have one-on-one sessions with the customers at RSA. So please tee us up if you want to, you know, show a demo or discuss more. We have a great team at hand to support you at RSA, customers at RSA.
Yeah, so Ian's saying on the spot again, he's given us specific location where to find you. It's booth N6564. It's in the North Expo Hall. So
that's right.
RSA is huge, right? There's a North and I think a South Expo Hall, and there's the tunnel in between where everybody has collected all their swag and they had their bags sort of lined up there. So definitely go check it out. I think this is an area where you kind of mentioned this, Venkat. It's like, you know, it's a problem. What are you going to do about it? Yeah. There are solutions out there. Stack Identity is one of them. You know, you can't claim that they're, you don't have the right tools or the arrows in your quiver, right, to solve this issue. So I would definitely encourage folks, go to stackidentity.com/IDAC. There's a link on there for Sarah, which is that shadow access risk assessment. I think you also do office hours, Venkat. If I remember, there's like a link where you actually people can book time. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, for example, we are getting a lot of inquiries on the new SEC. It's coming up with new rules for disclosures. Now you cannot just be silent about disclosure incident. You got to report it within 5 days, and then you got to report your 8K filing. So a lot of pressure SEC's putting on leaders to kind of report incidents and to kind of drive these practices. So let's help you stay ahead of these disclosures and reports. Nobody wants to put their hand up and say, I got a problem. But you invest more scrutiny. So yeah, definitely office hours is a way to kind of, you know, bring in our knowledge, you know, any topic you can bring in and set up time with us. And again, one of the good things about being a startup is, you know, we have extremely knowledgeable people. Been around the block a number of years, you know, built first generation products, second generation, now third generation. So they can help customers to kind of get to where they want to go. And that's a unique value. Beyond just the technology and platform, that's what we bring in. It's a huge amount of knowledge and approach and practicality to solve very, very thorny issues and with some deep technologies.
So we're going to wrap it up there, but we were talking before we hit record that you play competitive tennis. So I'm always curious about sort of rituals or superstitions or things that people do before they get into any sort of sporting event, you know, where they're competing. Do you have something like that that helps you kind of get into the zone and mentally prepare or maybe physically prepare for what's about to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most tennis people, I would say they are, you know, for me, for example, certainly, you know, warm-up is an important aspect of a ritual, at least 30 minutes. A mental cadence of how we're going to play out, doing some very specific targeted, you know, drills for the particular opponent in case. And most importantly, kind of manage my emotions because tennis is a very one-on-one sport. For me, one of the things I do really well is alternate nostril breathing, which helps me calm down a bit, about 5 minutes. Just kind of research my mind a bit, and it's just in the next 60 minutes is about a match. Because as you know, we're getting bombarded every day with messages and some bad emails, all those things. So at least be in a place where you can kind of free up your mind, be calm, you know, stable, you know, focus on that activity and enjoy it, I suppose. So there are a few things that I definitely go through. And that's one of the things I look forward to is the rituals as well. Sometimes we cannot control the outcomes. Well, we certainly can control the rituals.
I love that reminder to enjoy, right? It's supposed to be fun, right? I mean, competition is competition, but if you're, you know, playing a, you know, tennis or basketball or baseball or football, whatever version of football that you like, right? You have this idea of like, this is still supposed to be a game. You're supposed to have fun with it.
Yeah.
Jim, when it comes to yourself, do you have any, you know, rituals or things that you go through for if you're about to engage in something? And maybe it's not even a sport. Maybe it's just get in front of a crowd and talking or doing a podcast.
Yeah, no, it's definitely that. And it's also whatever sport I'm, you know, it's kind of become an unconscious thing. And I think if you start to incorporate those throughout your life, It'll happen unconsciously, which is to visualize yourself doing the activity mm-hmm. in a successful way. And you hear about it in almost every sport where some people will play the entire match or the entire game before they go out and play it, and they do it very successfully. So, I mean, my fitness has really become going to the gym and everything, and it's much more like a very solitary sport. You're completely in control of your results. Nobody else, you're not against somebody else. So a lot of times, like before I go and do a set of weightlifting, I'll visualize that set. And I don't, like I said, I don't even do it consciously anymore. I just kind of wind up doing it. And I think what you said for public speaking, that's one of the things I do. I'd like sit there and visualize myself presenting. And the more I do that, I find the better results I get. What about you, Jeff?
I'm probably a blend here of what Venkat said and yourself. I subscribe to the Littlefinger school of thought, which is fight every battle everywhere all at once. You'll never be surprised. So to me, that's about preparation. So, you know, for example, the podcast, you know, I have meticulous detail that I put into this to try to solve or anticipate every single issue that could pop up. Now, there's always something new that pops up, right? But it's kind of like, okay, let me visualize how this is going to work, or, you know, in this case, listen to how this might work or whatever it might look like. And, you know, the same thing I think with podcasts, like preparation. If I'm speaking, you know, if I'm playing, you know, basketball or something like that, sure, research my opponent. You know, do they tend to break left, break right? Do they prefer a fadeaway jumper versus a hook shot versus do they do a Euro step and wanna cross you up, right? Things like that. I think there's intelligence that you can gather and is part of the reconnaissance to say, okay, what opponent am I facing? Now I sort of know what to expect. Now how am I going to counter that? Okay. Whether it's basketball, you know, speaking in front of a crowd or doing a podcast. Okay, well, I know that, you know, I want to have good lighting because the camera is going to be on, or I want to have a good microphone because, you know, this is going to happen, or I want to have my notes prepared because we're going to have somebody really, really smart like Venkat on, and I don't want to look like an idiot, right? Things like that. So I again, it goes back to that Littlefinger thought from Game of Thrones, preparation. You know, visualize, prepare for every potential outcome. And you can't, it's more difficult to be surprised.
So if you're playing basketball against Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and you know he has a killer skyhook,
yep.
What are you going to do, punch him in his knee?
No, I mean, well, there's obviously quite a height advantage there he would have over me. But, you know, he had the skyhook and, you know, it was almost unblockable for people in the NBA. I mean, it was really down to his execution. And anything you can put in front of him to disrupt either the timing or the execution was the important part. He was going to be able to get over you.
That's a good point, Jim. This is about risk management, right? You give Kareem his points, but he stopped the others, right? You still win the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. You hear that in sports a lot. Don't let the superstar be the one that beats you. Take the superstar out of the game and let the rest of the team beat you. And if that happens, that happens. But it's a good strategy.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's a good spot. We'll leave it for this week. If you want to learn more about Stack Identity, you can find them on the web, stackidentity.com/IDAC. It's a nice little landing page where you've got a bunch of different links to talk about everything or go to everything that we talked about, including Sarah, the shadow access risk assessment. Venkat's office hours and just getting more information. And of course, you guys will be at RSA. Again, the North Expo Hall, booth N6564. And you can always connect with Venkat on LinkedIn. We'll have a bunch of links in our show notes as well, so make it easy for people to find, and they'll also be on our website. And then, of course, you can always reach out to Jim and I. We're both on LinkedIn. We're always curious to see what people think, if they have ideas or direction on how they'd like to see things go in the future. That's something we're always open to. So don't forget to visit us on the web, idacpodcast.com. Check out our still growing YouTube channel. And the link to that will be on our website as well. So with that, we'll leave it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Venkat, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. And we'll talk with everyone in the next one.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Jim, for having me.
You've been listening to Identity at the Center. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, hit the website at identityatthecenter.com. See you next time on Identity at the Center.